This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Trevor Chappell.
Dr. Michael Livingston is from the Centre for Alcohol Policy Research at La Trobe University and with us this morning. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Michael, firstly, has our alcohol consumption changed in the last 30, 40, 50 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's changed quite a lot since the 70s and 80s. Australian drinking peaked in the late 1970s. We were drinking around 12.5 litres of pure alcohol per person. And it fell quite a bit through the early 1980s. A lot of that around kind of changes to drink driving laws and changes to kind of norms about, you know, drinking at lunch, at work and things. And then we kind of stabilised for a while. But then in the past kind of 10 or 15 years, we've seen a decline again. Just a steady drop from about 2007 to the most recent data. So it's on the way down. It's now at the point where per person, Australians are drinking less than they have at any time since the early 1960s.
Do we know why that it's going down?
I mean, it's a really good question. We know that it's been driven mostly by changes in youth drinking. So we've got a bunch of different surveys that ask people about their recent consumption. And if you look at drinking amongst kind of 40-year-olds and older, the rates are pretty similar in the last decade. But if you look at drinking for teenagers and young adults, we're seeing big drops there. So we know that it's not a whole population shift in the recent sort of change. We know it's a youth change, but the question as to why there is a whole other kettle of fish.
So young people today are drinking less and people who are middle-aged or older are still drinking the same amount, not more?
Basically, in some of the older age groups, there's evidence of a little bit of an increase amongst kind of 50 to 60-year-olds. We're seeing that generation... Well, people who are 50 to 60 now are drinking more than people who were 50 to 60 15 years ago, but it's a smaller shift. The real movement is this big decline amongst teenagers and young adults.
And is it that they're drinking less? Is it that they're drinking less in different places, or is it that they're drinking different types of alcohol, or a bit of everything?
Yeah, I mean, with teenagers, we spend most of our energy looking at kind of 14 to 17-year-olds, those people who, you know, legally aren't supposed to be drinking. And what's happening there is a really big increase in kids just choosing not to drink at all. So the proportion of young people in the main survey we use who, you know, have had a drink in the past 12 months was about two-thirds in 2001, and it's down to a quarter in 2016. So it's fallen by more than half. And so kids are just not drinking at all. And then when you look at those who are drinking, their risky drinking rates are falling as well. So even those who do choose to drink are drinking less. So it's sort of it seems like an across-the-board reduction in alcohol as a activity for young people. And we're seeing now that starts to flow into young adulthood. So we all kind of notice this big shift in teenage drinking because it's pretty well measured in school surveys and the like. But as that generation has aged into kind of the, you know, 18 to 30, it's starting to flow on there, not as dramatically. It hasn't halved in that age group, but drinking is falling pretty sharply there as well.
The question might be asked, is it that young people are drinking less but taking other recreational drugs instead?
Yeah, it was the first thing we thought as well. We went looking through the data and checked what we could find. And I mean, when you look at sort of 14 to 17-year-olds, the only illicit drug that really registers is cannabis, and rates of cannabis use in that group are falling pretty sharply as well. And then if you look at young adults, I mean, there's bits and pieces of movement. We've all heard about the increases in things like methamphetamine use, but the prevalence rates are so low, we're talking about 1% or 2% of the population at the most, that it's not really registering compared to the decline in drinking, which has been really quite sharp. So it doesn't seem like there's been a big substitution where people have change their substance use of choice. They're obviously substituting something else in their lives away from substance use entirely.
It's really quite fascinating because you wonder whether or not it's the advertising campaigns that have been introduced. You wonder whether or not it's the education programs that have been introduced, because those things have been tried before and been generally a failure.
Yeah, I mean, we have all kinds of theories as to what's going on. I guess the first thing to kind of think about or to realise is that it's not just happening in Australia. This data with teenagers is pretty consistent across lots of the high-income world. All these countries like Australia that have had, you know, well-established drinking cultures and kind of long-running concerns about teenage drinking have seen really big drops in the past 10 years across most of Europe, the US, the UK, New Zealand, Canada. We're seeing different magnitudes, but basically a similar pattern of big decline. So whatever's causing it, it's probably not some specific campaign that, you know, we've developed and run here. It could be the kind of cumulative effect of the knowledge around the risks of drinking that has grown over the past 30 years or so. So I think we're a lot clearer now, especially with, you know, young people's developing brains and things, that kind of the concerns around alcohol consumption are much more sharply understood, I think, than they were 30 years ago. But, you know, there could be other things too. It could be, you know, changes in the way young people socialise. It could be the rise of kind of online ways of interacting. It could be health as a kind of emphasis for young people. We're sort of trying to explore these different areas and figure out what might be the key reason that we've seen this kind of global shift in youth drinking.
In some ways, do you stop and go, well, who cares, at least as long as they're drinking less?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's obviously good news from a public health perspective. We've got lots of evidence that the earlier kids drink and the more they drink as teenagers, the more likely they are to come into trouble with alcohol or other factors into adulthood. So it's obviously it's fundamentally good news to see this shift. But of course, you want to understand what's caused it. We like to think as public health researchers and public health actors that we have some influence over the way, you know, these trends unfold. And if we can better understand what's behind these, we can try and reinforce them or make them. I mean, there is some concern. There's a US researcher who's looking into sort of youth trends more broadly and has really drawn out the fact that while some of these measures, like youth drinking, are heading in the right direction, others, like mental health, are heading in bad direction. So trying to kind of fully unpick what are the underlying factors that are driving these changes in what it means to be a young person might be really helpful for, you know, catching some other risks that are increasing as these risks decline.
Big Tony, good morning.
I've got a good reason why the young people aren't drinking too much. It's that alcohol pop tax, mate. That killed consumption of alcohol, something chronic.
So as we saw the lolly water become more expensive, it changed.
Yeah. I've got two teenage boys and, you know, they hardly touch the stuff now. You know, one dabbles in the harder whiskey and stuff like that, but the other one, no, they just don't want to have a bar. And like your guest said, they just go out and socialise more now with the social media and whatever. I mean, I still drink me beer and whatever and rum, but... And you're right, I'm nowhere near what I used to. Probably because I can't afford it.
True. Hey, Tony, just with the... Because this is one of the things I want to talk to Michael about. Have you noticed that young people are far more aware of drinking and driving in comparison to perhaps when we're younger and whether or not that makes a difference?
Oh, for sure, mate, for sure. Yeah, my boys, they frown on me when I have two beers and I go to move my car in the garage. Oh, yeah. No, they're right up with it nowadays.
And the next day as well?
Yeah, pretty well, yeah. Yeah, no, they say, oh, Daddy, you're right. Yeah, no, of course I am.
Yeah, look, good on you. Though, two things there, Michael. The introduction of tax on alco pops and those sorts of drinks.
Yeah, it's a good point. And it's the one kind of obvious policy intervention in Australia in this time period. And it did seem to have some effect on young people's drinking. And obviously there was some substitution. People shifted from alco pops to cider or to beer or to mixing their own drinks. But it did seem to have an effect. But I guess, you know, there's obviously something else going on as well, given the consistency of these trends in places like New Zealand and England, where they didn't have the same intervention. So it's part of the story in Australia, but there's a bigger shift happening as well, I think.
I've noticed that young people are far more aware of drink driving than perhaps when I was younger, which is probably 30 years ago. And not only drink driving on the same day, but the next day in being aware. Perhaps young people are far more aware of the effects of alcohol and the ramifications.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the norms around drink driving have shifted a lot in the past 20 or 30 years. And that's undoubtedly part of why we've seen changes in drinking, that the people just don't accept the idea that you can drive home after you've been at the pub or you have four beers at lunch and then drive back to work. So that's clearly a norm that's changed. And I feel like it's changed not just with young people, but with most of the population. And we've done a bit of work looking at attitudes to the risks of drinking, and there have been quite big shifts across the population in people's awareness of risks, not just of drink driving, but of alcohol to health more broadly. So people are much more concerned about alcohol now than they were 15 years ago. You ask the population, you know, which drug causes the most deaths in Australia, and people now, the majority of people say alcohol, which is actually... Tobacco is the right answer, but there has been a shift towards thinking of alcohol as riskier than people did think about it 15 years ago. So it's fascinating to me that that's going on across most of the population. Attitudes are changing, but the only behavioural change we're seeing is amongst young people.
So actually, it's interesting you bring up smoking, because I've noticed a swing now of young people to smoking again, in that alcohol consumption has dropped. Smoking was probably not so dominant 10 years ago, but starting to come back again now.
It's not coming through in survey data as being a real increase. So we've had big declines in smoking through the 90s and early 2000s, and maybe they've stabilised amongst young people, but the rates are, it's not like they've shifted to smoking instead of drinking. It's just probably not declining as fast as it was.
Do you reckon, Yogi said that his drinking habits haven't changed. I wonder whether or not young people also have seen the excesses of alcohol and not particularly like what they've seen as well.
Yeah, that's a real theory, and we're trying to figure out how best we can test that. But there is kind of, you know, the generation before this generation who were 15 in 2001 was kind of a heavy drinking one. We saw a bit of a peak in the late 90s, and thinking about how you could, you know, measure whether there's some sort of pushback, and even just thinking about, when I was first moved into this field in the early 2000s, I remember the media coverage of alcohol was kind of constant. There were stories on the front page every weekend about the horrors on King Street on Friday night. So it's possible that there was just kind of a shift, a reaction. And there's a kind of longer term theory about how populations change their drinking, that they do kind of, you get these kind of reactions where the population's drinking a lot and people push back against it. They react against previous generations, and then eventually the kind of reaction goes the other way and we swing back around. But I think it's certainly part of it. I think there's not clear evidence, because it's hard to figure out how to test, but I think there is some sort of reaction to previous excesses.
Because it's almost that it's becoming not cool to be extremely drunk.
Yeah, and that's another really fascinating thing, which we've started doing a bit of qualitative work, interviewing young people about, you know, what's going on. And one thing that comes up is not only that it's not cool, but that it's potentially really embarrassing, that everything that you do these days gets captured in various ways on social media, and that you don't want to put yourself in a position where, you know, you're the person everyone's laughing at on Monday morning. So there's a sense that there's a kind of a new level of riskiness to being intoxicated as a young person than there was 15 years ago, when you could, you know, have a messy night and it's a story, but it's not kind of captured for all to see.
Yeah, for a long time.
Exactly, there forever. Yeah, exactly.
Don, good morning. Michael, with young people, there's also been the issue of preloading, which is very, very big with young people drinking before they go out. Has there been a change in that?
We haven't really got great data on that over time. It's often measured in particular studies in particular ways, but it certainly seems to be something. If you look at the data we do have from kind of nightlife studies, it's, as you say, very prevalent. The vast majority of people who are going out drinking on a Saturday night have been drinking before they hit the city. It's not clear whether that it feels different. It feels like people who are my generation don't talk about it happening as much as it does now. So it feels like there's been changes, but we haven't got good historical data to kind of unpack it.
I guess a lot of that type of thing is now anecdotal of what people are seeing, and whether or not the next surveys that are done will find out if those things are realistic.
Yeah, and we only measure so many, you know, different types of behaviours in these surveys. You're always frustrated trying to measure change over time and wishing you could go back to 2005 and change the survey questions that were asked. So we're kind of constrained a bit by what people thought was important, you know, 15 years ago. But it is a topic that hopefully we can keep kind of getting more useful data on over time.
May, good morning.
I'm 84 and I live in Brisbane, and I go to the city quite a lot by public transport. And I've sort of observed young people, so I can only do my observation of people during the day because I'm home on my own at night. Hmm. But I think it's the smartphone and lack of boredom, because they're always on their smartphones and in the buses when they're walking down the streets. And I sort of compare it with myself. If I get bored, I had at home, I tend to eat more, keep snacking, putting on weight. So maybe that would be like with younger people, if they're bored, that's why they drink. But because of the smartphones and their interaction all the time with other people, their mind is being is quite busy all the time.
You know, it's interesting, mate. It's not very often you hear about positives to do with smartphones.
Yes, I know, but I mean, it's a technological age, because I play solitaire on the computer, and if I get bored, I play that, and I can be sitting there for hours and keeps my mind active. Or I've got Foxtel, and there's more interesting programs to watch. And I think it's a matter of keeping your mind active that stops you from getting bored, and then you don't tend to get into bad habits.
Well, it's a possibility. Michael, we're seeing young people not only perhaps on their smartphones more, but more interested in keeping possibly physically fit and not wanting to... It's not to do with your own personal image, but there's an idea of fitness and looking after yourself.
Yeah, they're both really things we're trying to explore. I think especially the idea of boredom and options being changed. You think about being a 15-year-old, you know, outside the big cities in Australia in the early 2000s, you were constrained to, you know, the four TV networks and not much else and drinking. And I think there's so many more ways people can entertain themselves now that's got to be part of the story. And then there's the kind of broader social stuff that you don't always meet people in real space. You meet people online, you play games together. There's different ways of hanging out that don't necessarily centralise drinking.
Of all the things that you said earlier, the one that I find the most fascinating is the pre 14 to 17-year-old, and that had dropped. I would have thought 18 to 25, that there would be a drop there. But there's still that idea of experimenting with younger people, and that's what I find the most interesting.
Yeah, and I think one of the areas where there is some good evidence now coming out of other countries and a bit from Australia is that parenting has really changed amongst this current generation. So teenagers' parents are much more reluctant to supply alcohol than they used to be. They're much more likely to have rules about drinking that are quite strict. So I think there's been some of those attitude shifts we talked about earlier may not have changed the behaviour of 40, 50-year-olds now, but is changing the way they parent their young kids. So I think there's probably been some shifts there that makes it a bit easier for some of those trends to manifest amongst teenagers, because they've got both their own, you know, maybe less demand from teenagers, but also less supply from parents and more strictness around alcohol from parents.
So that laissez-faire attitude that there may have been 20 years ago doesn't exist as much.
Yeah, it seems like there's been real shifts in some of the messages around. I think there's been a common thought that if you supply alcohol to your kids, you have more control over what they drink and you might reduce their risks of becoming heavy drinkers. And the evidence doesn't really show that. And I think that's kind of sinking in, that parents are now aware that probably they shouldn't give their kids when they're 15, you know, a six-pack to go to the party, that there's probably more concerns amongst parents about their kids drinking and so more control over it.
Good. Drew, good morning.
Morning, guys. Yes. How are we?
Good, Drew.
Now, not that I want to throw a damper on this conversation, but I've been working in the security industry for about 7 years now, and it's the 18 to 25-year-olds that are really taking the social or anti-social out of the social.
Hmm.
They are just so pathetic by the way they smash those drinks down as quick as they can to wipe themselves out, and then all they want to do is cause trouble.
And is that something you've seen in most venues that you've been working in?
Mate, I've seen them in pubs, I've seen it at race courses, I've seen it at the events, like the winery walkabouts, I've seen it in everything, mate. Because our security does just about nearly everything. I even work in the hospital. And the amount of kids that come in to get their stomach pumped because of the alcohol coming through, it's incredible.
You know, it's not a matter of throwing a wet blanket on it, because it's a valid point. I guess, Michael, are we seeing the extremes are still there, but... percentage-wise, it's dropped?
Yeah, it's a really good reminder that I often talk about this, like everything's great and wonderful, but there is still plenty, especially amongst young adults, it's still quite common for young people to drink very heavily. And we do still see lots of people coming into emergency departments with injuries and intoxication. So it's not like this problem has gone away. It's just starting to improve. And we're kind of really hopeful that as these teenagers keep growing up into adulthood, we'll see more and more improvements. But we still have a huge problem, especially amongst young adults, with that kind of intoxication and the harms that come from it.
It's one of the reasons that this sort of research is important, is to try and find out what the trends are and replicate the positives and take a look at the negatives and find out how to deal with those in a social aspect.
Yeah, I mean, we're really hoping that the research we're doing can really pin down the drivers of this decline and then reinforce them and figure out, you know, is it something that government's done? Is it something that governments could do to kind of encourage it? Can we lock these changes in so we get these benefits, you know, over the next generations? And can we make sure we don't just get complacent about, you know, and stop doing the kind of things we know work around alcohol prevention, and this problem just comes roaring back? So it's about trying to understand what's causing these changes to kind of really try and, you know, lock them in.
Because if you deal with that, how much money is saved if we reduce the amount that young people are drinking, which then I would think flows through to their attitudes toward alcohol in later life?
Exactly. I mean, we know the cost of alcohol to Australia is in the tens of billions of dollars. When you look at across the health systems, the police systems, the, you know, lost productivity at work, there's a huge array of costs to society from heavy drinking. And, you know, if we can reduce consumption by 20%, we're going to reduce those costs by 20%. So there's all kinds of benefits to society, in even, I mean, in those cold economic terms, but also in terms of, you know, kids that don't end up dead on Friday night, with reductions in those longer term risks of cancer and heart disease and liver disease over the life course. There's all kinds of benefits if we can really cement these trends at a young age and kind of, as you say, have generations coming through where alcohol is less central to the kind of every aspect of their lives than we've had in the past.
What sort of reductions have we seen for young people drinking in percentage-wise?
Basically, we've seen a halving of teenagers drinking. So it's gone from about 60-odd percent to less than 30% who drink at all amongst teenagers. In terms of the volume of alcohol, our estimates for young adults are around about 20% reductions in the past 10 years or so. So we're seeing pretty good reductions in these young age groups. And then, you know, that sort of dissipates as you get older. But we're really hoping that those changes kind of are maintained and this decline keeps sort of flowing up the age profile as this group gets older and older, so that, you know, in the next 5 years we start to see declines amongst 35-year-olds as they get into that age group. So we're seeing, you know, pretty, in terms of historically, some of the sort of sharpest reductions that we have evidence for.
So we're hoping that the next survey will see that generationally they continue to drink either the same amount or less as they get older.
Exactly. They don't sort of catch up to previous generations, and we're starting to, it looks like that's going to hold. And the sort of group that's, this teenage reduction was first observed in the kind of mid-2000s, they're in their late 20s now, and that group is drinking less than they were 15 years ago. So we are sort of seeing that the decline isn't sticking, so that they're not 70% less than previous generations, but there is some catching up, but it's still a pretty big difference in generation. So it does seem like we've got this generation coming through who hopefully across their whole life course will just drink a bit less. And that should hopefully, you know, lead to all these reductions in problems we talked about before.
Sarah, good morning.
Oh, is that me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I've got three teenage daughters, 19, 18 and 16. And I really don't see a decline in drinking. What I see is alcohol companies marketing aggressively to teenage girls with very, very sexy, cute, packaged up high alcohol bottles. While my girls don't drink a lot, they do tell me a lot. They say their friends get very, very drunk at home before going out, and that most of their friends are now taking, I hope it's okay to say, they're taking pingers rather than drinking because that's the coolest thing to do.
What are pingers?
Oh, things like, I don't know what the other words are. I'm surrounded by teenage girls. I don't know what adult talk is. Pingers are like, you know, ecstasy, MDA, all those pills that they're testing at festivals. Pingers are the new thing to go to because alcohol is expensive.
Thank you for that, because there's a couple of points there. Firstly, Sarah talks about the marketing, aggressive marketing towards teenagers. Michael, is that because the alcohol industry is also recognising that they're not getting them?
Yeah, look, I suspect so. It's hard to be entirely clear that the public-facing arguments of the industry are that this is good news and this is because they've been more responsible. But I suspect there must be some concerns about this kind of generation that they're losing who are drinking less. So I'm sure there is some attempt by the industry to try and kind of claw back some of these declines and get some, you know, entrench some drinkers for future generations. And then the drugs question is, you know, as I said earlier, it's certainly... Again, not to say that kids aren't using drugs, because clearly some of them are. It's just not enough kids to offset this decline in drinking. For all the kind of high-profile problems with ecstasy and other illicits, you're talking about a very low proportions of the population, whereas alcohol, you know, previously was 90-odd percent of young adults were drinking. So there's some... potential that there's been some shift among some groups where people might decide it's too expensive to drink and they'll take pills instead, but it's vanishingly small, and there's not even really good evidence that use of those kind of substances is increasing. Like, it's not like that's a new problem. It's just a problem that goes through kind of periodic phases of being high profile.
I mean, people who are in their 40s, 50s and even 60s now, there were probably a percentage of young people when they were that age were experimenting in similar drugs.
Yeah, certainly you go back to the 90s and it was quite prevalent. The data's not so great, but it's not like this is a new issue, the idea of party drugs. It's been around at least since the late 80s in Australia.
Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Trevor. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks, Dave.
Hey, my sentiment to it is the decline that have a lot to do with drug and alcohol testing in the workplace, especially in my industry. If we're caught with... anything like that, well, it's an instant dismissal when you can't pay a truck off when you're not working.
And young people as well, though, Dave?
Yep. Doesn't matter who you are. If you walk into the office and they turn around and say, your turn, come here, it doesn't matter what age you are. I'm coming up to me 60th. I'm one of the old school, All the young ones are the same, and it's the same out here. You know, you go into a mine site, you draw the black marble or the whatever it is, and yep, it's instant drug and alcohol testing.
Dave, thank you. This again comes down to greater awareness everywhere of the effects that alcohol have, whether it's in the workplace or socially, but there's all sorts of testing, and also on the road now, more increasingly as well, Michael.
Yeah, I think it is kind of part of those, as you said, shifting norms and kind of understandings of risk. And it's, you know, probably important in those, especially those industries, to make sure that you do have people who are not blowing 0.05 before they go down the mine. But it's part of a bigger story where that's not what's causing teenagers' behaviour to change, but that's certainly, you know, making it less likely that when they're 20 they're going to be drinking heavily before work or around work. So it's part of a broader range of things that are changing, I guess.
But is it a broader attitudinal change to alcohol, whether it be to teenagers but also adults, perhaps are recognising the effects of alcohol aren't all that positive anymore?
Yeah, that's definitely happened. The data's pretty clear that people, if you ask them, you know, how much is it okay to drink before you put your health at risk, the numbers are coming down steadily. People think less and less alcohol is sort of safe. So there is a kind of growing awareness of the range of risks of drinking, and it's just manifesting, I guess. Maybe it's harder, you know, I might be more aware of the risks than previous 40-year-olds were, but my drinking patterns are well established by this point, whereas those attitude changes might manifest in behaviour change amongst 15-year-olds because they haven't got kind of set drinking patterns yet. They're easier to manipulate. Those sort of parental factors matter. Kids haven't sort of formed their relationship with alcohol. So possibly the attitude changes are happening everywhere, seems like. But the behavioural changes are really only happening at that kind of as new drinkers come into the, you know, relevant age groups.
Jamie, good morning.
G'day, guys.
Now, Jamie, you're younger. You're 29. What do you think?
29 on Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm obviously bang on in the demographic that you're talking about. And unlike some of the older callers you've had on so far that have seen the people that haven't changed, I see a lot of the people that aren't like, for example, my parents and their generation were. I have had three drinks, three nights where I've drunk ever. One of those was a night where I won a cocky, best and fairest, and some of the older boys decided that I needed to have a funnel. My wife, when we got married, she kind of stopped drinking then, and she now has a... She likes the Lord over me that she that I've had a drink more recently than she has. When we go out to parties, I very, very rarely see any of my mates or friends get to the point where they're noticeably drunk. It's just not something that we see.
What's the difference, though, Jamie? Why do you think?
Among my peers, I would reckon that there's, like you were saying earlier, the coolness of it is just not there. If you see someone that's completely, totally out of it, you don't think they're cool. You think they're a moron. That's how I see it. That's how I've always seen it. I don't know if that's true for everybody else in my age group, but that's me.
And is it also, having seen the generation before you, even your parents' generation, where drinking to excess was almost part of everyday, well, not I'm going to say everyday life, but when you would go out, you wouldn't have fun unless you were drinking, and whether or not that isn't an appeal as well?
I don't think I would base what I was seeing on what my parents did and whether that was fun, because, I mean, for example, not everybody my age does, but I play video games. That wasn't a thing for them. So I have lots of online interaction, another thing that you've spoken about. I don't know. I just think that there's people are making their own decisions, and the factors that go into those decisions are different to the different age groups.
Is it a peer group thing? Do young people feel more confident that they don't necessarily have to do what their peers are doing?
Yeah, well, that was a little bit it for me. To be honest, my not drinking actually started as I lived 10Ks out of town in a regional town, and so it was often hard to go out with the other guys on a Friday night. So I just said, you guys will be drinking. I don't drink, and so there's no real reason for me to be there. When the main reason I didn't want to go was because it was actually hard to organise to get there in the first place. And then subsequently, I always thought that, well, I told all my mates that I don't drink. I feel pretty silly at the start of now.
Yeah, look, thank you. Your line's starting to drop out, but thank you, Jamie. This, I guess, comes down to Michael. The different people have different attitudes, but whether or not that is possibly an attitude that we're seeing more in younger people.
Yeah, and I do think the point you raised about the kind of the pressures to drink probably have dropped a little bit. As the number of young people who are drinking falls away, it's easier not to drink. You don't have your whole peer group, you know, pressing you into that is the kind of main recreational behaviour. So it's kind of it can be a reinforcing trend. But as you see these declines, it becomes easier for them to stick because you've got more options. You've got more social groups where alcohol is not the only thing you do. You've got other ways of being with people. So it's fascinating to hear, you know, people's lived experiences.
Chris, good morning.
Well, I'm just inquiring about the statistics this bloke's coming up with, where he's getting his... statistics are saying people are not taking drugs and,
No, he never said that they weren't taking drugs, Michael. I mean, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, like, from where... he's saying that the alcohol level's dropping, but he's not saying where he's getting this information from. Like,
okay.
Is he getting Michael? From the nightclubs? You know, the people coming out of the nightclubs are not drunk. They're out of their heads on drugs, you know what I mean? Because it's cheaper for them to go to a nightclub and take an ecstasy tablet or whatever and then kill themselves at parties and blah, blah, blah. But back in our day, like I'm 70 years of age, we used to go to the pub, right? At 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, go to the Moreton Bay Hotel in Brisbane, wherever. It doesn't matter where. And you used to come out at 12 o'clock and the pubs used to start at 12 o'clock. There was no embassy on the owners having to have a standard of looking after us.
Chris, are you saying that there weren't fights and so forth at the end of pubs, pub nights when you went out?
No, not really, really, no. It wasn't there, mate. Like, you know, if there was fights, it would probably be somewhere else, but very rarely I've seen a fight in the Moreton Bay Hotel.
All right, look, let me go back to Michael. Michael, statistics, where do they come from?
Yeah, we're obviously relying on surveys and people self-reporting, and there is, you know, we know that people don't accurately report their drinking or their drug use. So all our figures are probably underestimates of true prevalence. But we've got a bunch of different surveys, and we do know that the trends in those surveys, at least for alcohol and tobacco, match up pretty well with what estimates we get from the Bureau of Statistics in terms of sales. So the surveys do an okay job of capturing trends, even if they're kind of underestimates. And, you know, it's unlikely, at least to my mind, that the level of misreporting around illicit drugs has changed a lot in the past 20 years. That people have always been a bit cautious about telling someone on the phone or in a survey form that they've taken ecstasy. So I suspect that we're seeing underestimates in terms of the actual true amount, but that the trends we're capturing in those surveys are probably reasonably accurate.
And it's the trends that you're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm talking about today, is what's changed. And we know that our estimates of prevalence are always going to be pretty fuzzy because we're relying on sampling the right people, getting a good representative mix of the population into a survey, getting them to agree to do a survey, which is increasingly challenging, and then getting them to be accurate and not even just honest, but actually to recall accurately what their behaviours are. So it's a very hard thing to measure all these behaviours. But I think a lot of those difficulties are pretty static, so that the trend should be kind of capturing a real shift in behaviour.
Alex, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Good topic. I'm enjoying it. I'm a winemaker by profession. Sorry, that's my neighbour's dog.
That's all right.
So I'm in the business of selling and making alcohol, and one of the things I think extremely important is how professionally trained a lot of the hospitality staff are now. They must have a responsible service of alcohol certificate, and they're given a lot more skills to manage the service of alcohol and the management of people who are drinking. And you can imagine a cellar door, a series of cellar doors, is a pretty good way to go and get a free drink. If you do it over a series of time and you try a few things.
Alex, can I just ask you, with the idea of hospitality and whether or not the training has made a change, do you think that it has actually stopped people from serving to make sure that they're making sure that the people that they're serving aren't drunk?
Correct. Well, it's not worth it. They will literally lose their job if they serve someone who's intoxicated. And, you know, I just find that it's from our point of view, serving at a cellar door, having staff that are confident to deal with drinking behaviour, they're just so much more aware of the responsible service of alcohol. And I think that's made a big difference.
Let me go back to Michael. Michael, the responsible service of alcohol?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly become a lot more rigorous in the past two decades what's required of people. And there is some evidence from New South Wales that when that's backed up with enforcement, with, you know, the liquor office going around and doing inspections and making sure that those, you know, trained behaviours are being enacted, that you do see improvements. There's a couple of surveys from that New South Wales that talk about people's experience of being cut off or of seeing people cut off at pubs, and that's gone up as this kind of enforcement of these responsible service behaviours have rolled out. But I think it really depends so much on state to state how those training packages are kind of enforced, that if there isn't any risk that you will, you know, lose your licence or get in trouble, then people fall back into the easier behaviours of just serving people. So I think it varies a lot between jurisdictions, and it really is kind of contingent on how well enforced the responsible service kind of conditions are.
Jacob, good morning.
Yeah, g'day, mate. So one of the previous discussions that you guys were having were about, like, in regards to how peer groups, there's not that sort of pressure to, you know, have alcohol. And this kind of gets me thinking about how we give mobile phones to kids at very young ages, which hit, like, pretty similar dopamine triggers. So kids are sort of being programmed to, like, use phones instead of alcohol as a way to sort of connect and enjoy each other's company. And I think that's one of the reasons that alcohol is, and drug use is, getting lowered.
Do you reckon drug use is going down, Jacob?
I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Tend to hear more about it.
Yeah, well, definitely. Well, yeah, we have social media and everything's recorded now, so, like, you can't really get away with anything if it's online. Yeah,
it's true. That idea, we spoke about this a little bit earlier, Michael, that young people have got other things to do, and whether or not the mobile phone in some ways has taken the place of alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really seductive theory to me because it fits the story so well. It's happened across the world, which is where we've seen these declines happening in a variety of different countries with different alcohol policy approaches. So it's a global kind of change. It predominantly affects young people, but it's really hard to pin down the evidence that that's the key factor. We're trying to, if you look at a particular teenager, the more time they spend online socialising, the more they tend to drink, at least in studies in Finland. So it's not an individual level, it's not a direct substitution, but potentially at a population level, it is really important. And we're just trying to figure out the best way to study that, whether there's some, you know, we can use the international data on when mobile phone rollouts kind of hit each country, but we haven't got there yet to really test that theory. But it fits so much of the kind of the data that it's very alluring as an explanation.
We'll look forward to the snapshot in drinking habits from 2017 to 2027.
Yeah, definitely.
Good on you. We might talk to you about it then, Michael.
Great, thank you.
Thanks very much for your time.
Well, yeah.
Dr. Michael Livingston from the Centre of Alcoholic Policy Research at La Trobe University. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Overnights on ABC Radio.